PCS and JICS to our meeting. Siya Bonani, are we ready to immediately go and start our meeting?
Good morning, Chair. We are ready to start.
Thank you very much. Is the acting national commissioner here, or who is leading the DCS team?
Chairperson, maybe just before we start, we received two apologies from the minister and the deputy minister.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome, Inspecting Judge. I have not seen you.
Good morning, Chair. How are you?
Good, good, good. Thank you. Is your team, Inspecting Judge, also here and ready for...
Indeed, Mr. Chair. We will be presenting. I will do a few brief introductory comments, which I will circulate to the committee, and then Ms. Temelihle Mhlanzi and Gema will present on our bill.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Can I just verify DCS, who's leading the team?
Good morning, Honorable Mr. President and honorable members. I am leading the team because of the apologies that have been presented, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Acting Commissioner Tabakhale. I think let's get straight to it, Honorable Members. We start with you, Acting Commissioner, or do you want to start first, Inspecting Judge?
We're in your hands, Mr. Chair, and the committee's hands.
Fine. Obviously,
happy to go first.
I want both of you to be in the meeting throughout because the issues are so relevant to both of you. Thank you. Inspecting Judge, do you mind kicking off with your team?
I'm happy to do so, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
And I say good morning to you and to your honourable members. As the committee is keenly aware, the Constitutional Court handed down its order in Sonke on the 4th of December 2020. That order determined that there were unconstitutional defects in JICS's statutory framework, and the court gave all of us 2 years to fix those problems. Those 2 years expire today exactly in 2 years' time at midnight on 3 December 2022. Both JICS and the department, Mr. Chair, have been working hard to meet this deadline. JICS acknowledges and appreciates in particular the commitment of Acting National Commissioner Tobokale and more particularly the hard work of Mr. Jacques van Wyk that he has demonstrated in trying to get these two twin statutes before the committee in enactable form. I think if I remember correctly, last month, Mr. van Wyk made a promise to JICS about getting something in order for the committee, and I think he even worked over the Easter committee, Easter weekend, and he delivered ahead of time. Even predating the Sonke judgment, Mr. Chair, JICS has been resolute in seeking to ensure that its statute provides it with adequate powers, protected by proper levels of independence, and for this purpose, it prepared a draft bill. With the deadline now fast approaching, it is necessary for the formal legislative process to proceed with all necessary dispatch. Mr. Chair, if you don't mind my saying so, I noticed that my colleague, Judge Brian Mashile from the NCCS is also present, and I'm particularly overjoyed to mention him personally and honor him. Mr. Chair, the Department, Minister Lamola, and JICS are all in agreement that three parallel processes must proceed together. First, the enactments necessary to the existing Correctional Services Act, which Acting National Commissioner Mr. Van Dyk will shortly present. Secondly, enacting JICS's draft bill, which Ms. Tembelihle Mhlantse Ngema will shortly present. And thirdly, JICS's organizational form. And that's where I want to spend the next 3 or 4 minutes, Mr. Chair. JICS highly values the committee's insight into the critical importance of prison oversight. Oversight, of course, is not a goal in itself. It is a practical way to enhance transparency and accountability. The overriding objective is to secure safe and humane prisons. And I've always emphasized, as you know, Mr. Chair, that this is, of course, primarily for inmates, but it's also for the personnel who guard them. The institutional dysfunctionality that JICS guards against protects also the operational working conditions of the personnel that we require to guard inmates. On this, Mr. Chair, the Constitutional Court found that correctional centres are fertile breeding grounds for autocracy and human rights abuses. I'm quoting. The court said that the vulnerability of inmates and the real possibility of infringing their rights to life, dignity, bodily security, and human dignity imposes a positive obligation on the state to provide appropriate protection. And finally, Mr. Chair, the court ruled that independence is an inherent characteristic of successful oversight. And adequate independence, the court ruled, is secured not only through structural, operational, and financial independence, but obviously also, as we held in the Glenister judgment, through the public's perception of independence. The public must, there's a functionality in the public knowing and trusting that that our organs of state operate independently. This is highly pertinent, Mr. Chair, to the draft bill that you will shortly be hearing about. In addition, I want to emphasize to the committee, and truly, Mr. Chair, I'm actually seeking to enlist the active support of the committee in this. We know that we have the Acting Commissioner. We know we have its draftsperson, Mr. Van Dyk. We know we have Minister Lamola's support, and we seek to enlist the committee as well. JICS formulated a convincing business case for its institutional autonomy. A fully representative and inclusive Interdepartmental Assessment Committee soundly recommended that JICS should become a national government component. This was embraced in a rigorous process by the then Minister of Public Service, Minister Mkunu, and of course by Minister Lamola and also by DCS. And because of this, JICS has come forward with practicable costing and staffing models. All of these steps included insight and input from National Treasury. Despite this, we've received some measure of pushback from Treasury. We know and we are grateful to the Minister, who is engaging actively with Minister Gorongwana, and he believes that he is achieving some progress there. JICS as a national, as an independent national government component, will not unduly strain the fiscus. It's already an existing governmental organization operating efficiently on a lean budget. JICS proposes that further funding that is necessary can come through a phased-in approach from DCS's underspending. As the committee heard last year, and Mr. Chair, your member, the Honorable Ms. Breitenbach MP, had choice words for that, the Treasury proposed that JICS be folded into the SAHRC. We humbly submit and respectfully submit that this is plainly impracticable and retrogressive. I haven't used Ms. Breitenbach's choice words because, like her, I'm a lawyer. There are fundamental differences between JICS and SAHRC. JICS is a specialized, focused, tightly run, nationally visible, statutorily created oversight body with specialist knowledge of the complex corrections environment. Absorbing JICS into the SAHRC will secure no cost benefit at all. The outlay is our personnel, and that will continue. Embedding JICs within SAHRC imperils the specificity of JICs' mandate and risks diffusing JICs' strengths and skills. To effectively and efficiently discharge our oversight mandate, as the Constitutional Court requires, it is essential that JICs be embodied in a fully independent and properly funded government component with autonomy. And for this, as I said, Mr. Chair, we seek the support, encouragement, the clout, and the commitment of this committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Inspecting Judge. Thank you for those very enlightening introductory remarks. I must also add my voice and welcome Judge Mashile, who will speak to him later. Thank you for that. Would you want us now to go to the presentation?
Please.
We're in your hands with your team.
Ms. Tembelihle Mhlanzi Ngema, on the mandate of our CEO, Mr. Vic Misser, will now present.
Greetings, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Inspecting Judge, Justice Edwin Cameron, Judge Mashile, Acting National Commissioner, CEO, colleagues from JICS, and colleagues from DCS. I will now present to you the JICS draft bill. It's version 20 of our draft bill, and our presentation will cover the following topics: the purpose of the bill, background of the bill, and the latest engagements between JICS, the Minister's Office and DM, National Commissioner, and DCS Legal Services, which the IJ has already touched on. And lastly, I will give summary of each chapter in the draft bill. I'm going to ask Ms. Cupido to zoom in onto slide 3, which speaks to the purpose of the bill. What is purpose of JICS bill? It is to give effect to such...
Just hold there because we want to follow you. It's not flighted.
Flight, okay.
Can that be flighted, please?
Can you not see it, Chairperson? Because it's, according to my screen, it is flighted.
Okay.
It is also showing on my screen.
Thank you. I can see now. Thank you.
Okay. What is the purpose of the JICS draft bill? It is to give effect to Section 85, Subsection 1 of the Correctional Services Act, which establishes an independent judicial inspectorate for correctional services under the control of the inspecting judge. It is to give effect to the Constitutional Court's judgment in Sonke Gender Justice versus the President. It is to regulate powers and appointment of the IJ, CEO, and JICS in general. It is also to strengthen JICS mandate to ensure effective and efficient oversight. It is to provide for mandatory reporting obligations and cooperation by officials of the Department of Correctional Services, and also to guarantee functional independence of JICS as a member of the National Preventive Mechanism. We can move to the next slide. We are going to look at the background of the JICS draft bill. The background of the JICS draft bill, we found it in the Constitution, which requires that conditions of incarceration and detention are consistent with human dignity. Section 85 of the Correctional Services Act also provides for the establishment of JICS as an independent office under the control of the IJ. In 2019, South Africa ratified the optional protocol to the Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhumane or Degrading Treatment or Punishment shortly opcat. It requires every state party to establish and maintain an NPM for the prevention of torture at the domestic level. Article 18 of opcat requires every state party to guarantee functional independence and independence of the personnel of the NPM. If we can move to the next slide, Ms. Cupido. This slide specifically deals with the litigation instituted by Sonke in the Western Cape High Court, wherein Section 98, Section 88A1B and Section 88A4 were declared invalid insofar as it failed to guarantee JIC's independence. This was later confirmed by the Constitutional Court in December 4, 2020, where the court underscored the importance of a properly functioning oversight body such as JIC's and that independence, structural, operational, and perceived is an inherent characteristic of an oversight body. The court thus confirmed that Section 91 and Section 88(1)(b) are constitutionally invalid and provided a constitutionally compliant interpretation of Section 88(a)(4). Section 88(a)(4) is that section that dealt with the matters relating to the misconduct and incapacity of the CEO. The declaration of invalidity is suspended for 24 months. The IJ has already alluded to the fact that we are left with 6 months to that period of 24 months of suspension. These, the next slide, please, Ms. Kibido. These developments thus make it imperative for JIC's independence to be affirmed through its own governing statutes in order to address lack of independence of JIC's. If we can move to the next slide, 7. This slide, Chairperson and Honourable Members, it deals with the consultation of stakeholders that JIC's consulted in the midst of preparing this JIC's draft bill. We have consulted with the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, the Department of Correctional Services, African Policing Civilian Oversight Forum, Africa Criminal Justice Forum, Just Detention International, Accountability Now, South African Human Rights Commission, the Department of Public Service and Administration, and National Treasury, and the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. We have a database where we are keeping all the comments we have received, and we have incorporated some amendments that we have received from these stakeholders. I'm not going to bore you with the latest engagements that have taken place between our office and the Office of the Minister, wherein we reached an agreement that the Correctional Services Amendment and JIC's draft bill must run concurrently in parallel processes because the inspecting judge has already touched on that. If we can now move to slide 9, Ms. Cupido. This slide deals with the amendments to the Correctional Services Act, which I believe that Mr. Van Wyk will deal with it extensively, so I am not going to touch it unless I am directed to do so, but I believe my learned friend from DCS will discuss the amendments to the Correctional Services Act. If we can then just move to slide 10. From this slide going forward, we are looking at each chapter of the JIC's draft bill and giving a short description of what each chapter contains. Chapter 1 of the JIC's draft bill, which has sections 1 to 4, deals with the definitions and provides that JIC's is an independent office from the department and it is under the control of the IJ. It articulates the objects of the bill once it is enacted, which is to, among other things, to ensure independent and efficient oversight of the treatment of inmates and conditions of correctional and remand detention. detention facilities. If we may, the next slide, which contains Chapter 2 of the Chief's Draft Bill. This chapter provides for the functions of the JIC's national office. It outlines the appointment processes of the IAJ, as well as the term of service and the powers, functions, and duties of the IAJ. It further outlines the appointment processes of the CEO, as well as the term of service and the functions and duties of the CEO. This is one of the issues that was challenged in the Songe matter. This chapter now addresses that lack of independency. It also details the appointment processes and functions of staff and special assistance, and finally, it permits delegations and assignments. If we may please move to the next slide dealing with Chapter 3 of the JIC's draft bill. It deals with the regional offices. It establishes JIC's regional offices and aligns them with the department structure. There is one designated regional office per region. In addition, it outlines the appointment process as well as the function duties of the regional managers to head each regional office. If we may move to the next slide. Chapter 4 of the JIC's draft bill contains the functions, duties, and powers of inspectors and investigators. This chapter outlines the appointments, powers, functions, and duties of inspectors and investigators. In doing so, it places certain obligations on the department to cooperate with JIC's inspectors and investigators. It also provides for inspectors and investigators to take photographs or use visual or auditory material subject to the conditions and safeguards. It also includes a national inspection plan and outlines the matters to be investigated by JIC's. It further includes clauses on limitation of liability and conflicts of interest and disclosure of interest for JIC's staff members and officials. If we may move to the next slide with Chapter 5 of the JIC's bill. It deals with the inmate complaints. The IJ may deal with various complaints from inmates. It outlines the powers, functions, and duties of the IJ when dealing with complaints. The IJ must, after an investigation has been conducted, and upon receipt of all necessary documents and material, make a finding and recommendations to the department, including the taking of disciplinary steps against officials or referring criminal matters to relevant authorities. The department must furnish JIC's with details of the steps taken to resolve the complaints, and where findings or recommendations are not accepted, the department must give reasons thereof. If we may move to slide 15, Chapter 6 of the JIC's draft bill. It deals with the correctional center monitors. Once this bill is enacted, what is currently known as independent correctional center visitors will be called correctional center monitors. This chapter deals with the appointment of correctional center monitors. It outlines their duties, term of service, and powers. Correctional center monitors must visit, interview inmates in public or private facilities, record complaints from inmates, monitor and report on the progress of their complaints. They are also appointed by the CEO in consultation with the IJ and the relevant regional manager. Heads of center must assist correctional center monitors in the performance of their powers, functions, and duties. If request from a correctional center monitor is refused, the dispute is referred to the IJ, whose decision is final. If we may move to the next slide. It's dealing with Chapter 7 of the JIC's draft bill. It deals with the stakeholders committee, which is currently known as visitors committee. And once this bill is enacted, they will be called stakeholders committee. This chapter deals with their powers, functions, and duties. Their stakeholders committee consists of various stakeholders, including officials from the department, members of the NPM, and non-governmental organizations. The stakeholders committee must meet and deal with unresolved complaints and other relevant issues. The stakeholders committee must provide the public and community's interest and involvement in correctional matters. And lastly, the stakeholders committee must submit, may submit complaints it cannot resolve to the office of the inspecting judge. If we may move to the next slide, dealing with chapter 8, the finances, accountability and reporting. The CEO is responsible to account financially on behalf of JITS. This chapter outlines how JITS will be funded and cross-references Section 91 of the Correctional Services Act. This is one of the issues that was challenged in the Sonke litigation, and it has now been corrected in the draft bill, and the Correctional Services Amendment will also address the issue of the appointment of the finances of JITS. It also includes how JITS will report on its activities and account financially. The IJ reports to the Minister and Portfolio Committee on all activities of JITS. The IJ submits quarterly reports and the annual report to the President and the Minister. If we may move to the next slide, it's chapter 9 of the draft bill. It deals with the offences and penalties. This chapter regulates offences and penalties. It is an offence for any person to interfere with, hinder or obstruct the IJ or any JITS officials in performing their duties and functions. It is also an offence to impersonate an inspector or an investigator. It places duties on JITS staff and officials to make disclosure, but also not to disclose certain information. It also includes secrecy or confidentiality clauses. If we may move to the next slide. This slide deals with, it's chapter 10 of the draft bill. It deals with a recommendation regarding disciplinary steps taken against officials of the department and disciplinary measures. This chapter intends to give JITS teeth to actually bite where necessary. The IJ may recommend that disciplinary steps be taken against an official of the department after an investigation for any failure to comply with this act. The IJ must report any failure by an official of the department to comply with the mandatory reporting obligations in terms of Section 95D of the Correctional Services Act to the National Commissioner, the Portfolio Committee, and may recommend disciplinary steps to be taken against the official. This Section 95D now extends mandatory reporting incidents to include, amongst other things, sexual violations, attempted suicide, hunger strike, assault, inmate on official, and others. The National Commissioner may institute disciplinary proceedings. If the National Commissioner declines to take disciplinary steps against the official, the National Commissioner must furnish the IJ with the written reasons why the disciplinary actions was not taken, and the National Commissioner must submit a quarterly report to the IJ on progress made regarding disciplinary action recommended. If we may move to the next slide. It's the last chapter of the bill, chapter 11, that deals with the regulations, transitional arrangements, the repeal, short title, and commandments. This chapter empowers the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development in consultation with the IJ to make regulations, and also it makes provisions for transitional arrangements, which is still outstanding at this moment, and it also includes a short title and commandments. That will be the end of the presentation of the JITS Draft Bill Version 20. Thank you.
Thank you, Tembelihle. Inspecting Judge or CEO, any final word or addition on the presentation?
Not from my side. Many thanks, Chairperson. CEO, Mr. Missa.
Good morning, Honourable Chair. Good morning, judges on the platform and all honourable members. Yes, I think it's captured well there on our presentations to you, esteemed committee. We now look forward to the presentation of DCS on the proposed amendments to the Correctional Services Act, and that will sync in with the version 20 that we've just presented to you now. And I'm sure that would give you a much more overview of the parallel process that we talk of, trying to move what we would call amendments to the Correctional Services Act, and most importantly, the presentation of legislation to enable JIGS to perform its mandatory functions. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you. Honourable Members, do you want to quickly get into your comments or questions on this presentation? I note Honorable Jan Engelbrecht, followed by Honorable Paula Nola, followed by Honorable Yoli Sayako, and followed by Honorable Werner Horn, and Honorable Vermanivo Drachen, in that order. Honorable Jan Engelbrecht.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry for my voice, but I've got a little bit of a bronchitis that I have to deal with right now. I have questions on Jig's presentation, but If I might propose that, can we perhaps have DCS's presentation so that when we come with our questions, we have a more informed view from both these entities, that we can then pose our questions after we've heard from DCS. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Or otherwise, I can raise my questions right now.
Just hold, Jano. That's a request, honourable members. Do we agree that we put them together and then we have one clarity or discussion on them? That looks very fair request to me. Can we move in that way?
I think it makes sense. It's fine.
Thank you very much. Just hold back your contributions then. Can I ask our Acting Commissioner Tobagale to quickly share the DACS presentation and lead it?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Our presentation will be presented under the branch Human Resources, the CDC, Ramuli, who is on the platform. We, however, have the subject specialist on the matter, Mr. Jack van Beek. He's the one who will then make the presentation. While I'm on the platform, Honorable Chairperson, let me also greet and acknowledge the presence of the inspecting judge and also Judge Mashila. I didn't do that earlier on. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. With your permission, we can then proceed with the presentation. I'm going to request that the colleagues don't get into the background and the reasons. Those matters have been covered quite extensively by the chief's presentation. We'll only deal with the issues that have to do with the progress thus far and the proposal with regard to how do we proceed to ensure that we comply with the Constitutional Court judgment, given timelines and the remaining period that we still have to work within. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you, Acting Commissioner. We're in the hands of your team.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Judges, and Honourable Members. I'm Jacques van Wyk from Legal Services, Correctional Services.
Go ahead, Jacques.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'm not going to allude to the background. It's been secondly exposed and deliberated on or discussed or presented. Yes, in principle, the Sonke judgment related to two issues in the main regarding the issues concerning the CEO of JICS and also the funding of JICS. It is correct that since 2011, Correctional Services or JICS has compiled and drafted a first version of the JICS bill. And also at the same, more or less the same time, their business case to become a separate government entity. As we are standing here, we have to comply with the Constitutional Court judgment by the 3rd of December this year. And since we have started the initial idea in curing the impugned sections, as was confirmed by the Constitutional Court in 2020, was through the JICS bill. However, the issue concerning the funding model and business model of JICS has not been finalized, and that has a profound impact at ultimately on the wording of either bill, be it the Correctional Services Amendment Bill or the JICS bill. And we did agree that there will be parallel processes, and we have engaged to such extent. We are fully cooperative in ensuring that ultimately a JICS bill will see the light and will be taken through the processes. However, Correctional Services are of the view, and it's also echoed by an opinion sourced from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, that the issues concerning the business case and funding model of JICS has to be finalized first before that bill can pass through its processes. In the meantime, we have to comply with the court order, and therefore, as also recommended by the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, that a separate Correctional Services Amendment Bill be taken through the processes to ensure that we comply with the court order. Now, in brief, the bill has been presented to the NCCS in terms of Section 84 of the Correctional Services Act for the necessary advices to be provided to the minister. It has also been deliberated at length with JICS. It has also been presented to DEFCOM, and DEFCOM referred it back for a legal opinion, which we are waiting for from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. That the appointment, as it currently stands, the CEO of JICS cannot be appointed as the accounting officer because it will be in contradiction with Section 36 of the Public Finance Management Act, as the CEO currently is not equivalent to a DG. Be that as it may, I'm just going to focus for now on those issues that are contained in the bill. I'm sure that you were provided with the draft bill. If not, I'm just going to briefly go through it. The first section of the amendment bill seeks to amend certain division, to insert such certain definitions into the act. The first one being head of the remand detention facility, which is not currently provided for in the Correctional Services Act, although there are numerous referrals to that term, and it basically just means a correctional official designated by the National Commissioner to manage and control a particular remand detention facility. In principle, this is the same. In principle, this is the same as the. This is in principle the same definition as head of correctional center. Then the second definition is that of sexual violation, and the third is that of torture, which is to be found in the newly proposed Section 95D, which I'll discuss just now. Then further, and to amplify and amplify through codification of the rights of offenders, in sections 30 and 31, which talks about segregation and mechanical or just normal restraints, and those inmates that are subjected thereto, that they must be informed of their right to appeal to the inspecting judge and that they may refer the matter to the inspecting judge, who must decide thereon within 72 hours. What basically is inserted is that they must be informed of the right to appeal, which currently is omitted from the current provision. Then further, also both in sections 30 and 31, is to strengthen the cooperation between correctional services and JICS, in that a provision is made that upon request, the head of correctional center or a remand detention facility must provide its must provide all information and documentation within 24 hours after receiving such a request from the inspecting judge. And this is obviously concerning segregation issues and also restraint issues of inmates. Then, further to that, in Section 88A1B, that is one of the impugned sections in the Sonke judgment. Now, currently it says the CEO is accountable to the National Commissioner for all monies received. We propose that the accounting officer of the we propose that it be amended to read the accounting officer is the accounting officer of the Judicial Inspectorate. However, and as I've mentioned earlier, that is in contradiction currently with Section 36, and we've sought an opinion from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor on how that specific section or subsection can be amended. So we are just waiting for that opinion. We've asked it on an urgent basis. Then further to that, we have taken out the provision that talks about is appointed by the National Commissioner, that is deleted. And then also we've brought into subsection 3, the issue of career incidents. It's just a mere add-on to extend the rights and obligations created thereby. And then finally, in terms of Section 88A4, we've just basically inserted where it reads. It starts reading any matters relating to misconduct in capacity of the CEO, and we've inserted vests in the inspecting judge, who shall refer his or her decision to the Minister of Justice Correctional Constitutional Development for implementation. Previously, it was referred matters concerning the misconduct or incapacity of the CEO was previously referred, or currently it provides that it must be referred to the National Commissioner, thereby also ensuring that the perception of independence is enhanced and that, in fact, and in reality, the independence of JICS is enhanced through that provision, through that amendment, proposed amendment. Then following the next section, Section 91 of the Correctional Services Act, also one of the impugned sections that were found constitutionally invalid, talks about the expenses of the Judicial Inspectorate. Currently it reads, the department is responsible for all expenses of the Judicial Inspectorate. The proposed amendment, and this is also in light of the fact that the business model and funding model of JICS has not been finally decided upon and has not been resolved yet, we have proposed that to read, expenditure incidental to the performance of the function of the Judicial Inspectorate shall be defrayed from money appropriated by Parliament. This has also been the view and opinion of the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, wherein it said that they are quite happy with that amendment, as it's also in line with precedent set in the National Prosecuting Act, which has a similar provision, and also the Act concerning IPED. And then finally, it's proposed to insert a new Section 95D talking about the mandatory reporting obligations of the department to the JICS. It encapsulates some of the reporting already provided for in the Act in various sections such as Section 15, 30, 31, etc., talking about the reporting of death of inmates, segregation, restraints, etc., and then also adding those that my learned colleague has already referred to, in addition to ensure that all the provisions and obligations of the department regarding mandatory reporting is encapsulated into one section, which is more user-friendly at the end of the day for those who have to comply with it. So the additions have been made, and those additions also flow from international instruments that were ratified by the Republic of South Africa, and needed to be updated as well. Then that is basically the draft bill. Then I can just mention that the envisaged plan is to finalize presentations to DEFCOM after we've secured the opinion from the Office of the Chief Statutory Advisor concerning the accountability and the provision concerning the CEO with its finances and the responsibility for the finances received on behalf of CHICS. Taking it through DEFCOM again, and then taking it through the JCPS cluster DG's meeting, committee meeting, as well as the JCPS cluster ministers, and then obviously through cabinet committees and cabinet, and it's envisaged that it be presented and at the end of the day to cabinet in June 2022, which is this month. In the meantime, all that is going on, the finality on the business model and the funding model of JICS is then awaited, and as soon as secured, then the issue, then the JICS bill can then be finalized in line with such decision, and taken through its processes to be ultimately enacted, or taken through the processes to be enacted at the end of the day. And by that time, there will also be another Correctional Services Amendment Bill, which will then talk to the repealing of relevant sections in the Correctional Services Act, updating of certain definitions in the Act, with references to those provisions in the newly formed JICS, or ultimately JICS Act, through the bill. And that is the plan of action with regards to these parallel processes, which we reiterate is definitely on the go. I can just quickly, if I just look at my last notes, I can just mention that we've already secured a CIAS exemption certificate from the presidency in terms with regards to the CSA bill. Mr. Honorable Chair, I think that is our presentation, and that is the way forward. An action plan was created some time ago. It was distributed to all role players, and to ensure that at the end of the day we comply with the court order. It is our submission that at the end of the day it's a necessity. And it's essential that the Correctional Services Amendment Bill be taken through its paces first, so that we can comply with the Constitutional Court judgment. And then as soon as those outstanding issues have been resolved regarding JICS, then the JICS Bill will then be taken through its paces as well and through the processes. I'm sure I covered everything. And with your permission, that is our presentation. Thank you for the opportunity, Honorable Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Van Wyk. If there's no further addition, Mr. Tobakhale, I want to go straight to the members.
No further additions, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Honorable Engelbrecht, I had held you back. I want to go straight to you and thank you for the intervention. You now have the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. And thank you for the presentations. I've only got a few issues. Firstly, I think I would just voice my support and agreement for the inspecting judge in terms of the notion that JICS should be incorporated into the Human Rights Commission, which I think under current economic circumstances might make good sense, but I don't think that complies with the very reason JICS exists. And it's definitely two very different things that these institutions are looking at. Then in terms of the JIC's presentation, the part on chapter 10 that deals with recommendations of the investigations. Now, if we go back a little bit to a presentation in our last engagement that we had with the SIU, something that was outlined there was that failure by accounting officers to implement recommendations and the problems that the SIU is experiencing in that regard. Now, we should foresee that there might be a possibility of the very same thing happening with JICs. So I just want to know how confident does JICs feel that the current draft of this bill will sufficiently prevent instances where you have failure of implementation of recommendations. If not, don't I think that a bit more legislative powers should be added in terms of that very specific problem that might come to the fore? Then in terms of the DCS presentation, the very nature of independence of JICs, I think, necessitates financial accountability not being towards DCS. And I'm quite happy with what the recommendations in terms of that was. But then there's another thing. If we look at the accountability towards the inspecting judge, which is fine, and the minister. Now, by extension, I think this gives the executive arm of government oversight responsibilities. I think it should more appropriately be situated in the legislative arm of government to perform oversight functions. So the accountability in terms of oversight should not be with the minister as such, but with Parliament. Because we have a mandated oversight function that we need to fulfill, and I can't see any reason why that should not include JICs as well, as is all the other departments and institutions of state. So that would be my remarks and possible recommendations in this regard. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Engelbert. I now recognize Honorable Kalangola.
Thank you very much, and indeed, let's welcome both the presentations. And indeed, the intervention that we must get both the interventions at once did allow us to measure the level of coherence between the two bills. And indeed, I can confirm from what we are reading from both the JICs bill and the Correctional Services Act bill. The Correctional Services bill, the coherence is there. That's one part that we've been able to measure. The first part from my questions is the fact that in the plan of action, what I could only get is that by June, the bill is supposed to be presented to the cabinet. But I think from what I'm seated, the presentation would have covered this, that this is the time at which the Constitutional Court granted the order, and it gave us 24 months. This is how far we are in terms of covering that 24 months. Now, the plan of action must cover in terms of what the Constitutional Court should have told us. Was if we don't do that, the committee itself won't be able to measure efficiency. But how far, how much time do we still have now to proceed with the bill? What then needs to be done if we are late? So I think that aspect, Chair, should have been covered from my point of view. Do you have a written provision in terms of the Constitutional Court order? The second important issue, Chair, that is raised both by both bills is the issue of national officials of correctional services being obligated to actually hand over information from the assessors or to JIGS. Was if we, the committee, would recall, we have long, even before Judge Cameron came, there has been a consistent problem of national officials of correctional services having been accused of not wanting to give or hand over information, necessary information, to JIGS assessors. So I think let us welcome that part, in that if they fail actually to provide the necessary information, there are consequences to that. And those consequences are clearly stipulated in the bill, in both the bills. So I think I appreciate that part very much. Thank you very much. That's the only contribution from my side. Otherwise, it looks like they are doing a good job. If we can just maintain doing our issues on time with regards to the order of the conference. Thank you,
Honorable Kanola. Namabondo Mise, Yako.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just hope Honorable Ngola's child is okay there behind him, because it is dying. anyway, I just wanted to say...
My meeting has been infiltrated, Chair. There is a man who just hands on.
I just wanted to say... I'm trying to understand both bills, I think I'm partly covered by my colleagues. I just wanted to know, how does the bill, the JIGS bill, being in place, affect the budget for correctional services? That's my only question. Thank you.
Thank you, Namambo Ndebise. I now recognize Honorable Horn.
Yeah, thank you, Chair, and good morning from my side. Chair, firstly, in respect of two issues raised by the Honourable Engelbrecht and the Honourable Nola, in terms of the comments made by the Honourable Engelbrecht about the oversight and accountability model, I would want to say that one has to carefully focus on the concept of independence in dealing with that matter. And if independence is independence primarily from both the executive and parliament in terms of the functioning of JIGS, then I believe the Honourable Engelbrecht's comments must be carefully considered. Of course, it is so that every institution or entity which is which functions on the basis of public funds is ultimately for the use of public funds accountable to Parliament, to this legislature. But I think his comments around this and the impact on independence as well made. Similarly, in respect of the comments made by the Honourable Ngola, I would also want to say that we want to know, as the legislature, who is to be accosted in the case of deadlines not being met, rather than the executive, even though we and it might be something we must address as Parliament in future, while we defer to the executive to ultimately come with these bills which must address constitutional deficiencies, ultimately in terms of constitutional obligations, lawmaking is our responsibility. And in that sense, I think his comments around time frames and making sure that we do not fall foul of the deadline is also well made. Then just allow me, Chair, to make a few technical observations. Firstly, in respect of the intended JICS bill, the presentation talks about in Chapter 3 of the bill replicating or duplicating or working along the regional structure of DCS and regional offices. My opinion and advice would be that we should be careful into how we draft that specific provision, for the simple reason that the regional structure of DCS is, as it is now, is not part of its legislative framework. So it's an operational model that was decided upon, and through the years, in terms of the presentations of DCS to this committee, it is a model not without its own challenges. So I know there is a constant consideration on the part of DCS to amend the regions or even the regional model. So in that sense, the plea would be just not to set in stone through the JICS bill something that is a movable structure or system on the DCS side. Then, Chair, in respect of Chapter 11, there was reference made to the Minister of Justice. I would think that for it to be fully aligned with ministerial responsibilities, we must rather refer to the Minister of Correctional Services, because at the moment, of course, there's a fusion between the Minister of Justice position and the Minister of Correctional Services, but that might not always be the case. And then lastly, in respect of the duties, powers and functions, I want to make the observation that it would seem the draft bill is still very much a replication of the current model, which is very much focused on the conditions of individual inmates. So I want to refer back to our previous engagement and plead that something be built into the enabling provisions of JICS which would allow the JICS to bring out reports and recommendations, which is more of a general or systemic addresses more of a general or a systemic nature, specifically referring back to the references made by the inspecting judge today around the findings by our courts, very aptly so, in the past, that the very architecture of our correctional services system lends itself to abuse of power and the consequences related to that. So I would plead that some provision be built into the bill to enable or not at least not prevent JICS from bringing out those types of reports. Then I move over to the DCS amendment or the presentation around those, Chair. Firstly, in respect of Section 88A, the presentation there, and rightfully so, indicated that it's to repeal the provision that the National Commissioner appoints the CEO of JICS, but there's no indication as to what process would be put in place then to appoint the CEO in future. And I think that information on what the ideas around that would be critical to ensure that whilst I want to say the very blunt way in which the independence of JICS were possibly or enabled, the undermining of the independence of JICS were undermined by the current provision, it would depend on with what provision we replace it, whether ultimately the whole idea of independence is reached. And then, and I want to stress that I think this is, to my mind, Chair, a very important consideration. The whole concept or the presentation around the classification of the entity, or what, as it has been referred to, the business and funding model, I believe we as a committee, based on what we've learned not from what, as the state law advisors referred to, the NPA and IPED, but rather around the information regulator, must sound a very early warning for all involved in this process not to repeat the mistakes that were made during that specific process. I would even urge everybody involved to talk to the information regulator. And to cut the long story short, the reality is that the information regulator has come into operation 5-6 years ago on the basis that the funding and business model would be sorted out. And it's still not sorted out. It's been delayed and plagued by the fact that whoever is in the seat as the Minister of Finance has changed. But the reality is, I think it would have suited and served the information regulator better if there was an insistence that that issue be settled before the bill is adopted. So that's just in terms of, I think, something we've learned. And then lastly, Chair, in respect of the latter part of the DCS presentation, one thing that did worry me at the start of the presentation is that for long we've been informed as a committee that, let's say, an overhaul of the Correctional Services Act was in the pipeline. And given the fact that this committee is burdened with a lot of legislation, I would want to plead that if at all possible, all of the amendments or intended amendments to the Correctional Services Act be brought in one amendment bill. The latter part of the presentation sort of indicated that that is a possibility, but that that's not necessarily what was going to happen. So the request is really just whether the process is on track to have it in one amendment bill in order for us not to deal with these in a piecemeal fashion and to allocate resources in terms of time and otherwise in a once-off manner to deal with amendments to the Correctional Services Act. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Narendra Rohan. Honourable Swart.
Thank you very much, Chair. And morning to colleagues, morning to justices and members of JICS and from the department. First, I want to appreciate the work that has been done so far. But, Chair, this issue of the non-compliance with constitutional court orders and waiting until almost the last moment to bring bills to Parliament has been addressed at the highest level of Parliament. I've raised it in the WIPS forum and in the programming committee. In fact, it was discussed yesterday. And the challenge that we faced with, from Parliament's perspective, understanding this is a complex issue, but we are now expected to deal with this bill. If it's only going to be presented to Cabinet in June, let's assume it comes to us in July. We've basically got 5 months to deal with a very complex issue which must go through two houses of Parliament and be signed into law by the President. Chair, it's going to place tremendous pressure on Parliament given the fact that we've got other pressing pieces of legislation. Now, from the parliamentary perspective, from governance of Parliament, there is now a ruling that where Parliament is given 12 months to respond by the Constitutional Court, within 6 months, that bill must be presented to Parliament. Where 24 months is given to Parliament, that bill must be presented within 12 months. Now, clearly, that's not going to happen with this bill. And I understand the issues that have been raised about the funding, the challenges of National Treasury, and I support my colleagues' concerns in this regard. But this is not a new issue, Chair. Okay, we've been discussing this model for some time, and it's regrettable that we are now faced with a challenge to meet a constitutional court deadline where there is no reading provision, there's no other way short of approaching the court for an extension of the date, given the fact that the declaration of constitutional invalidity will kick in December, at the beginning of December. So, Chair, I just wanted to express my concern and just to highlight the fact that the issue in general is being raised at the highest level of Parliament. We will try to do our very best to meet that Constitutional Court deadline. But one presumes then that either the Executive, or in this case, highly likely Parliament, will probably have to approach the Constitutional Court for an extension and then have to explain what has been done so far to comply with the 24-month period that was given. So, but I do appreciate the challenges that the department has had. I appreciate the incredible work that JICS does with the liaison with Treasury, but this is a general issue that we're going to have to look at as Parliament as well. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Swart. Honourable Alma Nemo Druggen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to everyone on the platform. I am not going to add to what my honourable colleagues have said previously with regard to the timing of bringing this bill to Parliament, because we are not going to have enough time left, or we have very little time left to meet the Constitutional Court's deadline and their requirements. So I'm not going to add to that, but I would like to understand, what is the delay in bringing this bill? What was the delay in bringing this bill before Parliament? Justice Cameron has already said that the financial issue is still a big issue that's being discussed. Is it only that? Is that the reason? What are some of the other reasons that caused the delay in bringing this bill timeously before the committee? Then secondly, I wanted to say previously, I am a little bit disappointed that I cannot contribute more, because the documents only came during the meeting this morning. So we've had no time to read. I can just listen to what was presented. So I'm not able to make a meaningful contribution, but maybe at a later stage I'll be able to do that if all the documents are submitted timeously. Then we have the NCCS present here, but I understand that the NCCS are advisors of the Minister on Policies and Regulations. What is their contribution to this bill on the independence of JICS? Because, the Human Rights Commission and JICS, absorbing JICS into human rights, I'm not in full agreement of that, because it's a specialized field that JICS deals with. But I'd like to know what the NCCS's view is on the independence of JICS. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Velma. Honorable Gladys Breitenbach.
Good morning, Chair. Thank you very much. Good morning to everybody on the platform. Chair, yes, I agree very largely with the inputs of Honorable Horn and Honorable Swart. I would just like to emphasize the urgency of dealing with this matter. JICS needs to be insulated. It needs to be independent. It needs to have sufficient firewalling to make it able to do its difficult job without interference and without fear of impacting on its tenure. So I would be very against incorporating it into an organization like, or an institution like, the Human Rights Commission. It needs to be a standalone, and it needs to be properly resourced, properly distanced, and its independence 100% ensured and completely insulated. Otherwise, we're going to have the same problems that we have now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Breitenbach. Can I get responses, firstly from DCS and your team, Honorable the Acting Commissioner, as well as Mr. Van Wyk, on the issues raised by the members?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and also to Honourable Members for the issues raised. I'm going to talk only to one and request that Mr. Van Wyk be given an opportunity to deal with the others. The issue that I'm going to deal with is the issue that was raised with regards to the action plan, with timelines showing the roadmap towards meeting the deadline. We did develop that jointly with JIGS. We're working based on that action plan, and we can submit it to the portfolio committee today. Because as we implement, we then review the timeline given the progress that we've made. The action plan actually assisted us to catch up because when we picked up on this task, especially after October when we won, started acting as a national commissioner, there was no action plan. So we had to quickly make it a point that we recognized the fact that we need to work looking at the deadline and outlining clearly what are the things that we need to do to get to meet the deadline. Partially, Honourable Chairperson, I will just deal with the issue of the budget. I thought I would deal with only one issue, but I think Mr. Van Wyk will get into the detail of that. The amendments affect the budget of the department in the sense that at the moment the funding that is allocated to JIGS is a transfer payment. Hence, the CEO of JIGS then needs to account to the accounting officer of the Department of DCS with regards to how the monies were utilized. So the effect of the amendment would mean that the allocation to JIGS will be appropriated like any other allocation to any other department or state entity through parliamentary processes, of course, administered by Treasury. Now, what it means is that the CEO of JIGS then becomes the accounting officer and will account directly with regards to the utilization of the budget. Those are the two issues that I wanted to deal with, Honourable Chairperson. I would then request through your permission that the fund base deal with the other issues that were raised.
Thank you, Acting Commissioner. Just before we go to Mr. Van Wyk, let me just come in there because I suspect that he's going to deal more with the content and the technical processes. Just so that you assist us, or you might want to think about this and respond later. Because from where I'm sitting, I want to just put it out there that as we meet here today, we're in a crisis on this issue. So that it's not polished, it's not glossed over. And I say that for the following reasons. That would have been raised by Honorable Nola and as well as both Honorable Swart and Horn. In the presentation, you say this is going to cabinet in June. This is the 3rd of June today. Why in June today? It's the 3rd of June. We have no indication, firstly, as to when exactly is it in cabinet? Where is it? As we sit here today, where is this bill? Has this bill been presented and discussed by any cabinet subcommittee? Or are we being told it is on the road to cabinet? Where exactly is this? Because the roadmap presented is very much incomplete, and I hear you saying you want to come back to us about that. I want you to, as you come back, to know exactly what you were looking for. There's got to be very specific timelines here. Maybe I need to start in this way. Forget about the 3rd of December. We have 5 months. It's now up until November. Forget about the 3rd of December. The 3rd of December, that's your constitutional court space. This is the time that we have. nothing in the presentation says this is going into cabinet. This is how much time cabinet is asked to look into this, and it must come out of cabinet at this point. Nothing of that nature is said. So there's definitely no timeline on that. If I were to give you an analogy of rugby, this is a sport I play and I watch every day. There's something that we call in rugby hospital pass. So when you are given this ball, there's an opening that is going to attack you. You just throw that ball away because it's about removing the ball from you. How the next person gets, at the same time he gets that ball, he is smashed into the ground. That's exactly what you are doing to us. So the legislature is getting a hospital pass. The ball must die with us in the manner that this process is being done, and unless properly clarified. Because what we have in the NA space, we normally take between 2 months and most 3 months on any bill that we have. Because it's not just a committee issue. We want to engage with the public. So if you come back to us in July, so it says July, August, that's the NA. And if we have to stretch that, you get into August. And from there, we go to the NCOP. Perhaps 1 month if it's Section 7-5. So already, even as you are here, we already know that we have a crisis in our hands with a lack of clarity as to where this thing is currently. The president is not given 3 days to accent to the act, because he's got to look into a number of issues, including the constitutionality of what we're presenting to him. So unless we are clarified as to exactly, so that we ourselves, as Honorable Horn was saying, we should be able, if we leave this meeting, and he's even made suggestion about making kind of a one amendment kind of bill, so that we re-look into our own. We're going to have a long constituency. We're going to be away for some time. That's something in place. So maybe before we go to Mr. Van Veen, that is something that you need to come back to and clarify to us. I'll give you those few minutes, and then at the end you indicate to us in relation to these kind of worries on this thin and incomplete roadmap, where you're taking us. Because we can do as much as we can on the content and be happy about the content, fix everything else. Process-wise, timeline-wise, we it's pathetic. We just know way. So I want you to think about that and come back. Mr. Van Veen?
Honorable Chair, thank you very much. Yes, I will respond to some of the issues that were raised. I can just reiterate that part of the background of this matter, as I've alluded to, is that since 2019, before the Sonke judgment in the Constitutional Court, the Jigs Bill was created by Jigs. The business case was also created and drafted by Jigs. The then concurrence between all parties concerned, including the executive, was that the issues surrounding Jigs would then be contained in a separate bill, ultimately in a standalone act, and that the relevant provisions in the Correctional Services Act be repealed through that process, thereby also conforming to
the then Western Cape High Court judgment, which was then ultimately confirmed by the Constitutional Court. So it's a process that has been engaged upon for quite some time. I can also mention that the Sonkin case started from January 2017, and amongst others, the respondents were, or are, the President, Department of Correctional Services and Justice and Constitutional Development, Minister of Finance, and JICS. And in those deliberations we had at the presidency, it was then agreed at the end of the day that this is the road that's going to be followed. That's when the issues emanated from the ring fencing of JICS's funds, et cetera, et cetera. As a result of that, the bill was then created, JICS bill was created. That was the idea. It was envisaged that finality would be secured on the business model and funding model of JICS, confirming their corporate identity. Because, as I've alluded to earlier, that would then inform the content of the bill, depending on the final decision. It was envisaged that that bill would then have been introduced by no later than August last year, August 2021. That was the plan. And then it was found that no finality has been received or obtained concerning the business case of JICS. Then a decision had to be taken that a short or brief Correctional Service Amendment Bill be drafted and taken through its paces so that we can comply with the Sonkin judgment. In fact, if the business case and business model was, if it was approved before now, then that route would have been followed. And it was envisaged, as I said, would take place during mid-2021. Now, here we are with regards to the time left, and sincere apologies from the Office of the Department for any inconveniences caused. It was definitely not deliberate. But in order to fix the situation, we had to then create a draft bill, which has been provided to the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, has been provided to the NCCS. We are currently busy with DEFCOM. Then it's the JCPA cluster, the JCPS clusters, and cabinet other cabinet committees, and then cabinet. The plan is still that it be introduced or presented to cabinet before the end of June. I know it's a very short time, but this is what we are working on. We will provide you with the action plan, or the new action plan, if I can call it that. There was an action plan before, but it had to be replaced by this action plan we currently have to try and secure compliance with the Constitutional Court judgment. It has also been discussed, and we have discussed this, and I've advised this as well, that if it's going to be impossible to comply timeously with the order of the Constitutional Court, that application be made for an extension on the compliance issue by Parliament, and citing obviously the reasons with the background as to why. I hope that addresses the issues concerning the so-called late submission of this bill. It is late, yes, we agree. But these are, with respect, and humbly we submit, the reasons for that. then with regards to specific areas of the bill, Correctional Service Amendment Bill, the issue of the appointment of the CEO Yes, we propose that the provision which stipulates that the National Commissioner must appoint the CEO is replaced by, it's not replaced, but is enhanced by subsection 3, which talks about the appointment of the CEO. The appointment, career incidents and other conditions of service, including salary and allowance of the Chief Executive Officer, are regulated by the Public Service Act. But I hear also what has been said by Mr. Horn, Honorable Mr. Horn, concerning this issue, that it does not address exactly who will appoint the CEO. That's a very, very good point. And at the end of the day, we will definitely discuss this intensively and urgently between our management and the IJ and his team. with regards to the issues concerning the Jigs Bill, I think Jigs will elaborate on that and will comment on that. I'm just going through the issues here. The issue about regions, for example, I hear what Mr. Horn is saying regarding that, and it does make sense. However, the structures concerning the regions in the Jigs Bill refer to the regions as contained or as implemented in DCS. So if it amends, then it will amend as well. But be that as it may, that's another issue and point for deliberation further. The issue about minister, we are also of the view that it should refer to the Minister of Correctional Services. At the end of the day, he's the responsible cabinet member for the portfolio for correctional services. Just give me a second. I'm just reading my notes. Concerning the overall of the entire act, yes, that we are definitely busy with. Another parallel process. We are almost done with the discussion document, which will set out those sections which have been reviewed and have been found to be possibly amended, with the proposed amendments and the reasons for that. We have been engaged with this process for the last 2 odd years. With regards to relevant research, international research, national research, et cetera, comparisons with ratified international instruments, Mandela rules, constitution, and all other legislative provisions and amendments thereto, and also incorporating issues addressing GBV. Related crimes, especially when it comes to issues such as minimum detention periods to be served before becoming eligible for consideration for parole. So that is also a process, and it's envisaged or hoped, that is the plan, that as soon as the issue surrounding Jigs has been resolved about the entity corporate identity and funding, and that bill can then proceed. As I've mentioned, then there will also be a correctional services bill, amendment bill, and not to do it piecemeal, but to incorporate not just the repealing of various sections in the Correctional Services Act concerning Jigs, but also addressing all the other issues that have been identified for the review of the Act. But I think we all could appreciate that is quite a lengthy process, and taking it through the process of amendment will also be a much lengthier process than just proceeding with the short Correctional Service Amendment Bill. So the idea was with this Correctional Service Amendment Bill is to comply with the Constitutional Court judgment and not raise many other areas or issues which stand to be, or which we propose to be amended for the sake of time. So that will, is being addressed, and we are definitely busy with that. Timeline, it's envisaged that before the end of October, the discussion document will be finalized, and then it will be circulated for discussion before we start with the drafting process. We are well aware that, and we definitely as a department, would always want to provide our cooperation, ensure that this time is compliance. And it is true, as some of the speakers have noted, that they are, it's a bit more complex, this issue, than just amending certain sections that have been found unconstitutional. As we have said ad nauseum, that it hinges on what the business approved business model and funding model of GIGS is. If that was resolved quite some time ago, we would definitely have been past this hurdle quite some time ago. Let me just see if I've got everything. There was a question, or a comment made regarding what was the NCCS's comments on the Correctional Service Amendment Bill. The comments related to Section 91 concerning the funding of GIGS or the responsibility for the expenses of GIGS. They were not happy that with the provision that we have made, or the wording that we have said that it be appropriated from Parliament. We are still of the view that in light of the uncertainty as to the funding model and the source and origin of funds for GIGS, that there's no other option really to amend it any other way, whilst we still have to comply with the court order. Yes, and Honourable Mr. Chair, hopefully I've addressed all the concerns, all the issues and questions raised. If not, I will gladly hear further questions or follow-up questions if needed. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Kanhei. Inspecting Judge and your team, perhaps your turn to engage or respond on any issues raised towards you or comments you want to make. One issue I wanted to check with you and your team, in the consultation process, on the stakeholders listed, there doesn't seem to be a significant stakeholder listed, which is Sonke Gender Justice. If you want to speak to that, whether up to this point there has been meaningful engagement with them, so that it's not an afterthought, or it will be difficult to just treat them like any other when they have been part of the genesis and part of this process. Comments on that will be welcome. I hand over to you and team.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Let's start with Sonke. We've been highly attentive to Sonke because they initiated the litigation. The fact is, Mr. Chair, very sadly, that Sonke no longer has a prisons project. We checked up on that. We rechecked up on that. And to that extent, we've kept them fully in the loop. And we are just more generally, we are in consultation with all the bodies operating in the NGO sector. We have established closer links with them in the last few years. Mr. Chair, let me be blunt. The first is that what I'm not going to do, with the greatest restraint, I'm not going to engage in a blame game about the delay. Your members and from all parties, from EFF, from ANC, from DA, have expressed their disquiet. There was a timetable. and I will bite my tongue about saying anything more. I will also say, Mr. Chair, that the Interdepartmental Assessment Committee finished its work long ago, and the only roadblock arose from then Minister of Finance, Minister Tito Mboweni, who made this suggestion, which I'm very glad to say sides of the law, this committee views rightly with skepticism. That has impeded our progress. The bill itself, Mr. Chair, very important for me to make this point with great respect and with great deliberation to your members. Many of the issues which your members have raised are explicitly dealt with in the bill. For example, the appointment of the CEO. For example, the appointment of the IJ. And let me, for example, take a further instance that Mr. Horn raised. Are systemic recommendations permitted? Yes, they're not precluded. The JICS bill deals with consequences of non-implementation. It's a great step forward. It says to the department, if you don't implement, you've got to give reasons why. And there are remedies provided in the bill. Now, I say all of that, Mr. Chair, to make a profound and important point, and I make it with some measure of emphasis and passion. I ask this committee not to do a Band-Aid approach. The CSA amendments are a Band-Aid approach. She says there must be sufficient. What we need to do for sufficient firewalling is two things. Minister Lamola is at present engaged with Minister Borongwana to ensure a means to provide the funding for. The point that that I think it was Minister Horn, your Honourable Member Horn, who also made that not be piecemeal like with the information regulator. We accept that we need a funding guarantee before we can press for our institutional autonomy, which is linked to the JICS bill. The JICS bill is complete. Apart from the small points which Mr. Horn and your other members raised, the JICS bill is polished, it's as complete as the proposed amendments. What I'm submitting to the committee, Mr. Chair, is that these processes must go ahead in parallel. And it is essential for JICS to have its sufficient firewalling, that it have its own statute which deals with the issues that the Constitutional Court raised. And that can still be done. If the CSA amendments can go ahead, as Mr. Jacques van Wyk suggests, then the JICS bill can also go, provided that we, within the next few weeks, obtain the guarantee from Minister Borongwane regarding our funding. It's not a good deal of funding. I think that Minister Lamola has a practical plan there in his discussions with his colleague, and I believe that that can be done. I'm asking you to help us. This is my plea to the committee, Mr. Chair. The committee can direct a well-placed boot into the people who are creating this blockage, and they can say that they support the conclusion of these processes together. Blockage at the moment is finalizing. That can be done. We've made practicable proposals. We have the support of Minister Lamola. For the rest, we implore the committee that the CSA amendments should not go ahead in isolation, but that they should go twinned, as Minister Lamola has explicitly said, and also Deputy Minister Patekile Holomisa has explicitly said that the two stat pieces should go ahead. Mr. Van Wyk has already conceded that if we postpone the JICS bill, there will have to be a further amendment of the CSA. And we say that that does not make sense from any point of view. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
My CEO, Mr. Missa, will want to add some things.
Thank you, Inspector Judge. Any additions, Chair Berlich and Mr. Fisser? Missa? Mr. Missa?
Once again, good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, Honourable Judges on the platform, colleagues. Maybe on a lighter note, I'm not sure if the acting national commissioner can make a budget allocation for me to deal with the hospital passes at the moment, because that would really help JIGS to amend itself on the hospital injuries alluded to by the Honourable Chair with regards to his fantastic rugby match that's occurring at the moment. More on a serious note, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, I think what is the most important aspect is that we've crossed the bridge. The bridge has been crossed with regards to the interdepartmental assessment. We've walked that road jointly with all members duly represented in that constituted committee, and that was established on the break of what we'll say the dawn of the COVID pandemic, March 2020. That has been concluded. They've made their recommendations. They've made their submissions. We've extensively engaged them on structural startup structures, the funding model, the phase-in approach, year one, year two, year three, aligning it with the MTF. Those have all been done, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. The problem that we are having now, the independence of JIGS in terms of constituting it as a national government component, I think that is the big elephant in the room. And once we have the funding in place, just to give you a rough offhand sums, we are short of 45 million to be constituted as a national government component. Now, we've even made submissions, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, to through our minister, Honourable Minister, to Minister of Treasury, on a phased-in approach, year one, 15 million, year two, 15 million, and year three, respectively, 15 million, in order to conclude this entire project as being constituted as a national government component. Be that as it may, this is still in the hands of our Honourable Minister, engaging National Treasury to sort out what we would say the funding model. So we've passed this bridge. We've already been constituted as a national, as recommended by the Interdepartmental Assessment Committee. I think maybe just to reflect on a few aspects. The one that comes through very strongly is by our Honourable Member Horn, who speaks about Chapter 3 and duplicating the regions, trying to replicate that of DCS. I think we should reflect on this. Obviously, the state law advisors actually indicated that we should align our footprint provincially and not to that of regional structures. So I think that we should take strongly note of and pen that somewhere in our notepads to deal with further deliberations. I think another aspect that comes through from Honourable Horn is the reports and recommendations of inmates that complains and dealt with accordingly. Maybe just to indicate that we are actually also preparing and submitting thematic reports on inspections, like the Imbongweni matter, like the pressure cooker of Mangahung, and it goes on. So there are thematic reports that covers general problematic areas within places of confinement that we share with portfolio and all interested parties within the correctional services environment. The aspect of delay, Honourable Chair, I think that has been canvassed already. I think it's something that we need to start reversing and working speedily to ensure that we try and speed up the process of making sure that these both bills, the amendment to the Correctional Services Act and the JIGS draft bill, runs simultaneously parallel processes in the hands of our Honourable Portfolio Committee. The roadmap, I'm sure that we can update that and submit that in due course to the esteemed committee. I think this is my bit on my observations on the presentation so far. And my last comment is that Section 36 of the PFMA does not specify that you've got to be a DG in order to be an accounting officer. It just simply says that an institution or an organization holding that of the CEO can also be appointed as an accounting officer. So I think those areas we can cross as we walk along together. Thank you so much, Judge. Thank you so much, Honourable Chairs and Honourable Members.
Thank you, Mr. Messer. Acting Commissioner, maybe before I come to you, Acting Commissioner, I see the hand of Chairperson Magwanisha. Welcome, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I have been listening with keen interest, and I align myself with your summary and way forward. Chair, I think one of the things that I think we can start doing is to write to the speaker. Maybe through your chair, to write to the speaker and argue this case. Because I am concerned that this matter will go to cabinet, and the National Treasury will be coming with a financial approach to a constitutional matter. And I think we have to argue it very strongly that the president needs to intervene and ensure that he brings both the Minister of Finance and the Minister of Justice, because we can't sustain a situation where every time Parliament is seen to be disrespecting constitutional court decisions. And this one is even worse because there is no read-in provision. So I would suggest with all humility that that letter should be very urgent. The president in this case must intervene. Because I was generally listening with keen interest, I don't see, I only see a worst scenario. Honorable members have raised some certain issues, which I would say issues that need to be improved in the bill. And the bill is not before cabinet. And cabinet will still have to discuss. They don't just rubber stamp things. They can even send it back. So I really do not see us having a good bill passed by both the NA and NCOP before December. But I think the Concord would ask a question that whatever you are raising, it matters that have happened within the executive realm. What has Parliament done? On record, we have not done anything. That is why I think the first thing that we should move with speed is to ensure that that high-level meeting takes place and this matter is resolved, and we have, because I do think that the issue raised by Honorable Horn about the information regulator, I think it's a good casing point. We cannot really be treating independent institutions a sub-directorate of departments. It's wrong. And so we have to apply our minds properly to ensure that we have really, at the end of the day, we have a bill that really guarantees the institution, the independence of JELC. And I don't think that we will be able to do that before December. And if I may just indicate, Chair, that there are about two or three bills whose, that we must finish by November, that are not yet before cabinet. They've got a constitutional court deadline. So your rabbi story is really true. That our colleagues are not, in fact, they are engaging in a serious reputational damage for the institution of Parliament. A serious reputational damage, because when the Concord makes a decision, it says we give 24 months to Parliament, not to the executive. So I was just going to suggest that an urgent letter should be written to the Speaker and articulate our position and the fact that we think that in the spirit and in the letter of the Constitutional Court judgment, JICS should be independent, not to be folded somewhere else. And the President, when he makes intervention, he must take that into mind. He must take that into consideration, and we should not treat constitutional matters as purely on financial basis. It would not work. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson Magwanishe, for that intervention. Very much helpful. That's certainly going to inform our way forward. Honorable Xola Nwole.
Well, thank you very much. And I think indeed what the chair did was a critical intervention, particularly because I wanted to speak in relation to the image of Parliament. I draw an inference on this effect that the chair is saying that there is a concerted effort to ensure that our colleagues derail the work of Parliament and tarnish the image of Parliament. In the response from the Correctional Services Department Chair, Mr. Van Wyk is saying, if the period expires, we'll apply for an extension. I find those sentiments utterly disappointing, because once we can't plan for extensions. In our planning, we can't include extensions in our planning, because an application for extension is different from having been granted extension. Not all extensions that Parliament applied for in the Concord were granted. So we can't plan for extension on the basis that we're going to give reasons, as though that those extensions that were denied by the Concord, there were no reasons given. I find those sentiments utterly disappointing, Chair. As we speak, Parliament is applying to the Concord for an extension in the electoral laws, which is an opposed application. So there are no guarantees of Parliament or Cabinet or whatever that when there is an application for extension, therefore that will be given. So I just wanted to register that, Chair, before the meeting goes to conclusion, that I find those sentiments utterly disappointing, because we literally can't plan in our planning we include the extension that no will apply. And a mere application does not necessarily mean a granting of extension. So in our terminology, in our planning, in our plan of action, we shouldn't include the application for extension. It's always there, even if you don't include it. You have a right to apply. It's a known fact, common cause. So you can't want to plan on the basis of that. I mean, it's common knowledge, I think, that if it expires, we apply for extension. But are there guarantees that it will be granted? No. So I'm utterly disappointed with that, Chair. Thank you very much. I just wanted to register that.
Thank you, Honorable Nwole. I'm coming back to you as I wrap up, Acting Commissioner. Any comments you want to make?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable members and the inspecting judge and colleagues from GIG. The action plan that we have, and of course we're going to revise it based on the outcome of the engagement we're currently having with the committee, does not include or have a provision for an extension. I think that's the first thing. The second thing is that with regards to the content and the readiness on the side of both the department and GIG, as it has been presented in the meeting today, that work we have been able to do with, we will also be able to work on the proposals that were, or the comments that the portfolio committee came up with today, with the required speed. This is a task we have to do it on a daily basis. The only hurdle that if it has not, the our speech have actually stopped us from making progress is the financial motivation. Because as it has been clearly presented in the meeting today, DPSA did concur with the business case and the formation as the inspecting judge has indicated. The only issue is that DPSA is not getting to the space of treasure. We also cannot get into the space of treasure. And this is a matter that our minister has been dealt with almost on a daily basis. We have made our presentation of the Bill to the Development Committee, which is a very critical hearing house for considerations or memos that are supposed to be discussed by cabinet. And yet again, the Development Committee raised the issue of the financial model. Hence, we came back and quickly briefed the minister and said to the minister, we still are being slowed down by that part. So the sooner that part gets resolved, we will be able to move with the required speed. Yes, we agree with the fact that we are very late. The timelines are not even tight. There's no enough time. And for that, we would like to apologize to the portfolio committee. It's very clear that we have put the committee and the whole of Parliament in a position that it works off with regards to considering the bill moving forward. I just need to also state our commitment to working on the task together with Chief, with the speech and the application that we need to subject ourselves to. Those would be my comments, Honourable Chairperson, and let me thank the committee for providing us with an opportunity to engage on this matter. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you, Acting Commissioner, and your team. On that, can I immediately indicate to you and your team that I expect the action plan before next week Friday. I can't give you 2 weeks for that. You know, we have examples where there are people who have asked information that is in their hands. They ask for extensions unnecessarily. So 7 days is what we require to get the action plan. And before our next meeting, I would need to have received that. The action plan also, which has been enhanced by today's discussion. I think that's the critical point I want to leave you with. On our part, we'll take to heart seriously so the urgent interaction and communication with the speaker. To deal with all of these matters, in particular the raised by the members, more especially by the chair in this regard. We were very much clear out of this meeting. There's no ambiguity. Whatever happens, whether it is the process or action plan and amendments, we're clear about our own sense that all of that has got to happen with JICS being an independent body. We're not vague on that particular issue. I think there are quite a number of other content issues that would have been taken into account by Mr. Van Veit in that regard. We also have got a homework chair as the entire committee of this oversight, which should extend into the whole of Parliament. Your point you made does need that we change tact, we change the way we do things. The point you made about when the Constitutional Court makes those directives, the executive is part of an enabling process, but those directives are made to Parliament, to the legislature, and therefore it means that we need to reclaim our ground in every step of the way. In fact, with that, it does suggest that when such a directive is made, we should be the ones imposing a roadmap so that we don't ask an action plan today. The roadmap must be imposed by us because we are the custodian of that directive, its success and failure. So that's a bit of the homework for what we have to do beyond just this kind of an aspect. So with that, on these two presentations, I want to thank you, Inspecting Judge. I'm hoping you're not going to leave because I want you to listen to the NCC, Meta and your team. Also to thank you, Acting Commissioner and your team. And I want us to step off this and get to the next item, colleagues. Can I invite you, Acting Commissioner, to introduce the NCC? And then I'm going to be welcoming Judge Machine in that regard.
Yes. Yeah, no, thank you, Honorable Chairperson. We yes, we are here at DCF to be part of a presentation to be made by the MCDF. This is an advisory body for the minister, directly responsible to advise the minister at that level, mandated by statute. We have also prepared ourselves to engage, flowing from the presentation that would have been made by the MCDF. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Acting Commissioner. Honorable Justice Mashile, I want to welcome you, leading NCCS, to our meeting of the subcommittee on behalf of all the members, that you lead your team in making the presentation. So I will start with you, and I'm sure you will put your orchestra in place, but would welcome your remarks in this meeting. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair, and honorable members, our colleagues from JICS as well. Thank you. We are here because you, the Portfolio Committee, has invited us to apprise you of the backlog relating to LIFR profiles that we are currently dealing with. In doing that, we will seek to show what we have done, what we are doing, and whether it's worth persisting with what we are doing. If it works, it will be worth carrying on. Otherwise, it should be abandoned. I think that said, it's important to start with the structure. I'm sure most of you should be aware of the National Council for Correctional Services. But I'll start by outlining what it is, how it is constituted. Well, its composition is there are three judges appointed or nominated and appointed by the minister, amongst which he appoints the chairperson, and the other two become the chair's deputies. We also have one member from the magistracy of the level of, he would be a regional magistrate, who is appointed after consultation with the, I think it's the chairperson of the magistrate commission. And then you have someone from the NPA, a DPP or a deputy, and you also have two members from DCS. At the moment, we have one, I believe. The minister has appointed one who will be joining us, but so far we have one. And then a member from the South African Police Services. And we have one from I can't remember the others, but there's one member from a Department of Social Development. We don't have that, but we have written a letter to the authorities to appoint that person. We have operated without one for quite a while now, but I believe we have embarked on that process of getting that member. We have two members with special knowledge of the correctional system, appointed also by the minister. And then we have four people representing the public, appointed by the relevant portfolio committees. That's the structure. Well, it functions. Essentially, what we do is we receive profiles from the parole board, and we consider them and make recommendation of placement or further profiling, and with suggestion on what they should do to improve their chances or the inmates' chances of being placed on parole. And we also either of our own accord or at the request of the minister advise on draft legislation and policy on the correctional system. The minister as well prefers draft legislation and major proposed policies to us for advice and comments. I can't remember, there are quite a number, but some escaped me. Oh yeah, we have, we reinstate at the recommendation or on recommendation from the parole board, we can reinstate if someone's parole was revoked. We can reinstate it, we revoke, and that requires the quorum of council. And then we have a review board, which is constituted from members of council. Was constituted by six members, being the chairperson and five other members of council. I'm just trying to think. Oh, yes. Now, let's come to the real reason why we're here. That was just by way of background. Why this backlog? In 2011, there was a case called Van Wyk, where the court decided that the credits that inmates earn should be considered when parole is when considering parole and credits earned during incarceration should be considered. Now, that was the, that's in terms of Section 22 of the Correctional Services Act. That resulted in about 8 years coming off from the minimum number of years that was required for consideration for parole. That was 20 years. So from 20 years as a result of the judgment, the number, the minimum number of years became 13 years and 4 months. And in 2005, there was, I think the president, there was a remission of 6 months, and again in 2012, another 6 months, and that brought the minimum period to 12 months, 4 months, 12.4 years for inmates to qualify for parole. Now, in 2012, again, okay, the Van Wyk immediately meant that about 4,300 inmates qualified for consideration. So even if there was no backlog, the council was then stuck with about 4,500 or more than 4,300 matters to consider. In 2019, there was the PATRA judgment, which I think the Constitutional Court found some inconsistency in Section 136 of the Correctional Services Act, which was said was inconsistent with the Constitution. The result was that instead of consideration being considered from consideration of placement on parole being determined from the date of sentence, it became although the judgment said no, consider it based on the date of commission of the crime, which means from 1 October 2004, if a person had committed a crime in 2000 but was only sentenced after that date, 1 October 2004, you would then calculate date of consideration from 2000 and not from 2005. That judgment meant that about 1,000 or more than 1,600 again qualified for consideration immediately. So that added to the number of the 4,300 that came in 2011. I'm just trying to think where to go now. And now, for my visual challenge comes in now here. I should have said this before. I'm sitting with a member of the Secretariat, which is a body that is that helps us discharge our duties to the minister. They bring profiles to us, they prepare them and so on. Now, I'll ask the head, Mr. Mbilini Twala, to go through the stats. If you look at slide 9, I think, or slides 9 to 12, that's what you'll be dealing with. There are tables, which I think requires sight. For that reason, I've asked that he should assist me. But from there, I'll take over again. Thank you, Mr. Mbilini, Mr. Twala.
Thank you very much. Good morning, honorable judges and honorable members of the committee as well. I'll start from
slide number 9, which provides a summary of the total number of profile reports that the NCC has. We have 3,053 profile reports that the NCC has. 70 of those, in fact, were considered by the NCCS. We are just waiting for an addendum for them to be finalized. 1,026 chairperson are subject to an audit by the secretariat, NCCS secretariat that is. Again, I want to indicate that in fact, were considered by the NCCS. We have 786 chairperson at the ministry. We have 91 that are, in fact, they are on the road to the ministry. They've been, as I've said, considered again by the CCS. We have 608 profiles that were considered recently by the CCS that have been processed again to the ministry. We have 37 that were, in fact, finalized. They are on the road to the electorate PRR that will further communicate those profiles to the regions. Then, Chairperson, we have 187 profiles that are yet to be considered by the NCCS. Then we'll move to the next slide, Chairperson. The next slide talks to the Fanbake profiles. The total number of Fanbake profiles is 1,793, subject to an addendum. 68 profiles that are subject to an audit process, there are 567. At ministry, it's 597. On the road to the ministry, it's 80. And we recently considered by the NCCS 289. On road to the current PRR, it's 87. Yet, not yet considered by the NCCS 205. It's Fanbake cases. And then with regard to partner cases, subject to, or rather waiting for an addendum is 2. Subject to an audit process by the NCCS Secretariat is 459. Administered 139, on the road to the ministry, it's 11. Recently considered by the NCCS, 369. Not yet considered by the NCCS, 282. The total for partner cases, 2%, is 1,260. Just a breakdown of the cases that are yet to be considered by the NCCS, 2%. 16 of the 487 were received in 2021. And 571 were in fact received in 2022. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll hand over back to the judge.
Sure. Thank you. So I'm just lifting my volume. Okay. I think we are now on slide 13.
You are muted, Judge. Please. Thank you. I did not hear you. You were muted.
Yes, no, thank you. Sorry, thank you, Chairperson. Okay. I think we are now on slide 13, dealing with how to invigorate the capacity of the NCCS. I referred earlier that we had operated without one member from DCS, and that has been corrected. I think the effect will only be felt from the next meeting as she hasn't started. However, we'll continue to have and no one from DCS, Department of Social Development. That is in the process. What else? Just trying to think. Yes. Okay. Now, how we have been, what is it that we've been doing to address the challenges concerning this backlog of LIFO profiles? We embarked on, I think firstly, we embarked on what we call an outreach program that involves going out to the correctional centers to talk to, normally, okay, the purpose is twofold. We walk about engaging the inmates. Number two, we invite the professionals who contribute to the profiles that ultimately come to us. And we did that because the problem that we picked up was that the quality of the profiles that were coming to us were of poor quality, well, at times, not always. Some of them were of poor quality. And we thought it would help if we could invite them so that they sit with us for the first half day to see how we conduct our business, how we start considering a profile of an inmate, and how we come to the to a conclusion. So, and that way we find that they learn a lot. They somewhat know what we look for, because the complaint was that they were surprised that sometimes we further profile these people when they have or in circumstances where they had recommended parole, would in fact further profile. So that actually assists. What else? Oh, what we also picked up is that there were matters that were not coming to us. For some reason, some of them fell into cracks. We were confronted that we have considered profiles that were submitted later, whereas others that were submitted earlier were still awaiting consideration. So we've asked some of the centers to assist us with lists of those matters that they think have fallen into cracks. I'm thinking, so I just want to find out from Mr. Charlie if I'm leaving anything. Yes? What is it?
Changes in proposal.
Oh, yes. Now, what is it that we can do? Okay, or another problem that we picked up is that there's a shortage of professional staff. What do I mean? I refer to criminologists, clinical psychologists, psychologists who are major contributors to a profile, without whom one cannot really make a meaningful recommendation to the minister. And there's a shortage. We would recommend strongly, and we intend to approach the commissioner in this regard to make appointments and finances permitting. And what else? Yes? Covered that. Sorry, I just want to see that I don't leave anything. We are almost done. Sorry. Yes? Yeah, all right. But, yes, From, oh yeah, I think what I must cover is this. To address the backlog as well, what we've done is to, or we have increased the number of times on which we hold these, or we consider profiles. Generally, I mean, ordinarily, it would be once per month, but because of the backlog, what we've done is we sit at times for 2 weeks. That's just a measure, an extra measure that we adopted to try and address the backlog. So that has yielded positive results. Now we are sitting at about 2,066 profiles that have been considered, and we are left with 487 that are still to be considered.
Just a quick reminder that face masks must always be worn on.
It's not me. From the 487, I think Mr. Trauma said that 16 is from last year. This year we received that 487. So from that, the balance from 487, 16 was received last year, and the balance is this year. And I think if you consider the fact that we had 2,566 backlog, we are now left with that 487 overall. I think the strategy of holding more regularly is working, and we intend to carry on with that. There's no reason why we should abandon something that is working. Thank you very much. I'll now invite questions. May I just add that I am accompanied by other members of council. To mention them by name, we have Mr. Nkopo, we have Mr. Daimani, Dr. Coven, Dr. Reverend Lucatini, Ms. Vilagazi. So I have mentioned Dr. Govin. Yes, I have. Some of the questions will be, or I will ask that where I can't, I'll appeal to them to either supplement what I may say, or if what I say is sufficient, then that will be the end. Thank you. Chairperson, over to you once more.
Thank you, Justice Mashile, for that presentation. If the team can just remove the presentation, and I want now to invite honorable members to connect with the presentation, your comments, questions, and contributions, please, to the presentation by MCCF. I note Honorable Nivot Drachen. I recognize you, Honorable Nivot.
Can the Secretariat spot Honorable Nurtin, please? Chairperson, thank you. Thank you to the team from NCCS, and good morning to you, Judge. I am Wilma Newhood-Druffin. I'm a member of the committee. I am deaf, and I am using a sign language interpreter. It's her voice that you are hearing today. And thank you very much for your presentation. I see that on slide 4 and 5, there is an outline of who are the members that constitute the council, constituted by the minister. However, I am not clear on 83.2.G. In the Act, there's two people with specialized knowledge of the correctional services system who are not in full-time service of the state. Who appoints those two specialists? Is it the minister or is that from the NCC? And then further, it has more people who are not in full-time employment of the state but are represented in consultation, they are appointed in consultation with Parliament. So I'd like to ask about them as well, if they are there. Also, in the list of people, I see nobody there from the parole board who is on the council. So I would like to know, how often does the NCCS meet with the parole boards? My following question, part of the reason I ask this is that I would like to know that the victims of crime, does the NCCS ever interact with the victims of crime before a decision is made to grant an offender parole or not? In the constituency where I work, the victims or the community are not informed or they're not aware when an offender becomes eligible or when he goes out on parole. And, of course, they go to SAPS to ask for information, and SAPS themselves say they know nothing about inmates who are released on parole because the parole board does not inform them. So nobody informs the victims about inmates being released on parole. So does the NCCS meet or make contact with the victims or the community where the victim lives before a decision is made to release an offender on parole? And the following question, you stated that there are people, there's nobody from social development who's appointed on the council. I would like to know that how long has this position or this post been vacant? Perhaps if the person from social development was there, they could give more assistance and feedback to ensure that, to assist in terms of psychological counseling and assistance to the victims, that, that information could be shared in the council. Furthermore, in your meetings, you meet 2 or 3 days for every month. So what I'd like to know is the actual number of meetings. So is it just that 2 days or 3 days in the month? And then in terms of the poor quality of reporting, I'd just like to get clarity on that section. Where did that come from? Is that the department officials who have a poor quality of reporting? And thank you, Chair. Those are all of my questions.
Thank you, Honourable Velma Nebot. Judge Mashile, I could notice that you wanted to respond as she was asking. So,
Chairperson, if I can just intervene, I'll tell you what, because I can't write the questions down. I would rather take one person at a time and to have 10 questions at a time. I can't remember everything. I suppose some of the members must have written the questions down and they'll remind me what
that's fine. What we'll do, we should normally do in the subcommittee. So we'll ask you to respond to each question at the end of it. So like now, I want you to come in and respond to the issues raised by Honourable Velma Nebot before I go to the next member.
Member, yes. Okay. Now, as I say, I can't remember each and every question, but she raised so many. Nice. And if you can just go to the first one quickly.
Honourable Velma.
appoint?
For asking all the questions.
The appointment.
I'm just really interested.
Who appoints? Sorry, all members of the NCCS are appointed by the minister, either after consultation with one of the for example, in the case of the SAPS, it will be in consultation with the National Commissioner. In the case of the NDP, the DPP or his deputy, it would be the NDPP, National Director of Public Prosecutions, or Batori in this, Ms. Batori. And I've said that they're all appointed by the minister. So even the four that you raised are appointed by the minister. And in that case, with after consultation with the relevant portfolio committee, parliamentary committee, yes. And then your third question, when do we meet with?
My third question.
No, we don't meet with subject to correction. Yes, we don't meet with the parole boards. They hold their own meeting. They make recommendations to us, which we then consider and recommend and forward to the minister. The system, do we meet with the victims? The system is inherently built to accommodate the victims, either through the process of VOD before or ideally. I'm not saying it's happening always. A mistake might have happened in the past. Ideally, before someone is placed on parole, the victims should know that this person will be released. Normally, there's this process where the victims are and the offenders meet. The offender would ask for forgiveness and all that. So that process does take place. At times, the victims would say, no, I cannot, I don't want to meet the offender, in which case they are asked whether they want to make written representations. If they don't, then the victims will, if they qualify, if they've been rehabilitated, they would be placed on parole. But generally, it shouldn't happen that a victim does not know that someone is coming and would be placed on parole.
Yes, how long it is the person looking for?
Position of DSD member has been vacant for probably a year or two. There was someone in 2019 and 2020, but I think she was recalled. But she was never replaced with another person. And then? I said ordinarily, it's once, the meetings of the NCCS are once per month for 3 days. And then the special meetings that I referred to, what we call marathon meetings to address the backlog, we would take a week from Monday to Friday. But the ordinary meetings of council are once per month for 3 days. Yes. I'm not sure what was about poor quality. Did you want to repeat that question? I'm not sure whether I understand. I did mention that we picked up that the quality of profiles that we received were not up to standard, which prompted us to go out there and make the people who contribute towards these profiles aware that the reports were such that we could not this thing base our decisions thereon. And I think there were some members of council, Marita Mani must have been involved in the training of psychologists. Who else? I only know of Ms. Rataiman. I'm not sure whether other social workers and social workers, psychologists, and criminologists, we don't have that much, but the two psychologists and the social workers, we always have their reports and we don't make decisions without those. So, but as I say, I'm aware that Ms. Rataiman was involved. Perhaps you would want to come in here. Can I invite you, Ms. Rataiman? She's muted.
Yes, Judge, I don't know if you can hear me.
We can.
I tried to raise my hand and I couldn't.
Yes,
is it in order if I make a contribution, Chairperson?
Carry on.
Yes, some of the challenges that we picked up were, for instance, copy and paste. That was common amongst psychologists and social workers. And they would not make a recommendation. The NCCS does not meet the offenders. So we rely entirely on the reports of the psychologist, the social worker, the CMC, and the CSPB. So when they don't make a recommendation and we have not had an opportunity of having an interview with the offender, it becomes difficult for us to recommend with confidence that this person is rehabilitated or is not rehabilitated. The other challenge that we picked up with this psychologist report is that they do not always do a risk assessment. Or even if a risk assessment is done, they do not give us the risk level. The risk level gives us some idea of where, in terms of rehabilitation, the offender is. So just off the top of my mind, those are the things that I come up with. There have been, of course, cases where the CSPB and the CMC reports would be identical, and it does not help us. Then we have to further profile or ask that it should be addressed. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there another question? Sorry. Okay. Yeah, I think we have addressed all her questions, Chairperson.
Thank you, Judge.
But maybe on restorative justice, VOD, I'm not sure whether Dr. Govin would want to elaborate on what has already been said. Dr. Govin?
Thank you, Judge, and honorable members. I would just like to comment that the NCCS is very much aware of the issue of restorative justice and the participation of victims where they are willing. And we are very aware of the fact that it must be voluntary participation as well. The VOD process, as you all know, was initiated in 2012, and the program is running quite efficiently in most of the centers. However, in certain instances, we do find that the challenge is that victims cannot be located. But when they do participate, if they want face-to-face participation, if they're willing to participate, then that is facilitated by the centers through the CSPB and the CMC. Where they are not willing to participate, they are given the option of making representations, written or oral, as the judge has mentioned. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Nola.
Well, thank you, Chair. Mine is just one question relating to the offender profiling issue. You know, Chair, if you recall, when we went to Mdantsane Correctional Center, the community corrections report there was that over 1,000 parolees a much serious majority of them have absconded without having been traced. The department is failing to trace them, so they are brought back to incarceration. Now, with the profiling business, to what extent does the NCCS assist in situations like those? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mola. Precise. Judge Mashile?
Perhaps I should, I'm not aware of those who have absconded, but let me invite members. Mavilagazi, do you want to come in here, perhaps?
Yes, I'm here, Chesh.
Oh, yes, okay.
Yes, I definitely not aware of any abandonment.
Yeah, especially 1,000.
Yes, no.
Perhaps,
unless maybe the question can be rephrased, I'm not sure that I fully understood it also.
If you will rephrase it, because it might not have to do with lifers, but Honorable Mola?
Oh, yes.
No, Chair, I think the Tanzania issue was just an example. But yeah, the actual question is, how does the NCCS assist in situations where you have a number of lifers who have been placed to parole but have absconded without being having been traced successfully by the department? In that situation, in the profiling a program, is there a way where you assist those kind of situations? Thank you.
Judge Mashile, as you respond, and Mayor Vilakazi, so it would help if you just indicate that, in as far as you are concerned, if you say so to us, that there's been no lifer who has absconded. Please say so. There's a higher rate of absconding that we received, but not necessarily relating to lifers. It would be others that would. So clarify the matter so that we know that in your space there's no absconding.
Indeed. As far as I am concerned, Chairperson, there hasn't been. There have been those who have recommitted crimes whilst on parole, and their paroles have been revoked. So I'm not aware of anyone who has responded, but I leave that to members. Dr. Reverend Katini is within the system. Maybe he might want to shed some light in that regard, but I'm really not aware. But I leave it to members again.
Okay.
Reverend?
Thank you, Judge Mashile. With all protocol observed, good afternoon. From the side of the NCCS, we haven't tackled issues of absconding. And I think it will be for determinate sentences where we'd have those that are serving other sentences absconding from the system. But of course, there are also departmental procedures that we follow in such cases. As Judge Mashile has alluded to the fact that we do have revocations where a person commits another crime, then we would consider such. But with regard to just other parolees who are in the system, the social reintegration component does its part in terms of ensuring that those that have absconded are traced and brought back to the system. And that also ends up with a process where they are reincarcerated and considered for parole placement in the future. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
I proceed, Honorable Nabatemba Mosokotel.
Thank you very much, Chair. And also thank you for the presentation. I just want to make a follow-up, Chair, on the question that has been asked by Honorable Velma on the issue of the meetings between the council and the parole board. And the answer was that just said they don't meet. I wanted to find out, considering the problems that we have so much, if they don't meet, and there are some clarities that they need in terms of the submissions of the board to them. How do they get things clarified in terms of those issues that might have raised by the board before they go to the minister? And also, Chair, on the very same question, I just want to find out from Judge Mashile that out of this meeting, is it possible, or is there any need, or if not, that they might consider that going forward they meet in order to, before they can even advise, take their advice to the minister? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Justice Mashile.
The question, if I understand it, is that yes, I do reiterate that we do not meet. We meet the parole boards through their reports. You remember that they consider the reports of the social workers, psychologists, and the CMCs. They then compile their report, which comes to us. Their reports, which come to us. And that's all. And again, let's make a distinction. The only part of the profiles that come from the parole boards that come to us are lifers, nothing else. So, I don't know whether there is I spoke about outreach. And when I said profiles were rather of poor quality, we invite parole boards, the CMCs, social workers, and psychologists to the first day of our meetings when we visit these centers. So in that sense, yes, we do meet with parole boards. So maybe I should retract there. But we don't have formal meetings where we sit with the parole. It's a different structure altogether from ours. It considered determinate sentences, or inmates who have been sentenced to determinate sentences. Okay. And I can invite any of the members to elaborate. If they think it's necessary. Chairperson, it would seem no.
Yeah, I think. Lusanda?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I just wanted to say that there was a question that the previous speaker asked, and I just want to say that the reason that we don't meet with the parole board, I believe, is to give us objectivity. They make their recommendation, and then that comes to us with the whole profile. And then based on our experiences and our expertise, then we engage on that level, whether or not their decision we believe is correct. And then also there was a question, what happens if we make a... What the meeting with with the parole board, CMCs, and answers some of their questions, because most of the comments we receive after those meetings are, now we understand better what we need to do. And they're allowed to ask questions, and we explain to them what exactly it is that will make a good report.
Okay. Thank you. Your last word, Judge Mashile?
Nothing really, other than to say that it would appear from what we've said that the measures that we have taken to address the backlog are working. And as I said, there is no reason to persist in doing what we are doing. If the number has dropped to 487, I think it says, yes, continue. Thank you very much. And thanks for the opportunity of addressing you.
Thank you, Judge Mashile and your team. We really appreciate the briefing and presentation. We obviously ourselves are going to have to grow in understanding more the nitty-gritties of your work and what you do, because in the exchange of questions, it's clear that we need to do more homework in that regard. I think today's presentation is going to allow us to become more involved and interactive with your issues. But I think the progress you have presented to us is very much welcome. Thank you for that. We appreciate Acting Commissioner, any comments for our wrap up?
Yeah, no, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have also noted and we welcome the presentation. I must indicate that we have put measures to improve on the quality and the flow of the profiles from the correctional facilities to ourselves at the head office, having put in place quality assurance team at the regional but also at head office level through our pre-release settlement directorate in the chief directorate that deals with corrections, personal corrections. So we take the feedback from NCCS very serious, and we address those cases where we have workshops with our parole board. We actually invite members of the NCCS just to give away without necessarily interfering with the independence, the objectivity issues that we raise. In instances where there are those problems with the profiles, we address specific cases and we also address specific professionals so that we make it a point that we continuously improve. On our side, we ensure that the profiles that are brought from correctional facilities to head office for submission to NCCS meet the requirements. Hence, the issues will be around the quality and the content from the reports of the professionals, which then is the decision feedback that we will then get from the NCCS, because the NCCS deals with the content. So we also would like to thank the committee for giving us an opportunity to sit in and be part of the engagement with the NCCS. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and the Honorable Members.
Thank you. Thank you. I want to take this opportunity to thank you, Inspector Judge Cameron and your team, the Acting Commissioner, and your team, as well as honorable members and everybody in the meeting. It was fruitful discussions. We appreciate it. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair, for joining us. At some point, I wanted to hand over back to you. Thank you. The meeting is at this point.
Mr. Chair, before you go, please. Yes. Sorry, Mr. Chair, on an unrelated matter, which I bring to you only because we don't have a lot of opportunities to discuss specific correctional services matters in the portfolio. I can do it here or I can do it offline after the conclusion of this meeting with you, which relates to the FET Certificate in Correctional Services Leadership Program. Problems that has arisen. So whichever way you think is more appropriate, I can either do it here right now or I can give you a phone call after the conclusion of this meeting.
Let's do that just offline in order for us to bring it to a proper meeting. It's important, the issue that you are raising, so that it's not just attended as a last thought matter. If you're happy with that.
Thank you very much. I think I will do that. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Yano. Thank you, members. The meeting is adjourned.
Recording stopped.
personal correction. So, intelligence is where there are those problems with the profile to me. I mean, miss the fire contact with the honorable members.
Thank you. Thank you. I want to take this opportunity to thank you, Inspector Jeff Cameron, and your team, the acting commissioner. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair, for joining us. At some point, I wanted to hand over back to you.
Yes. Sorry, Mr. Chair, just for you, I can do it here or I can do it offline after the conclusion of this meeting. I think that has arisen in the conclusion of this meeting.
Let's do that. It's the last thought matter.